hello everyone. Rare Friday video for me. I'm recording this on Thursday. I found myself with a spare hour smoking a beautiful H. Upman Connoisseur B. And I thought, you know what? I've got a little bit of unfinished business. I promised that I would have a look at the Tucker Carlson, Buckley Carlson video and comment on it because a lot of people were talking about it. And also the part two of the Connor Tomlinson, David Starkey thing. So I thought, well, this is a big old cigar, this one, the Connoisseur B, beautiful cigar. And I thought, well, rather than just, you know, selfishly smoke it, why don't I, in the spirit of giving an abundance, create something that you guys can enjoy over the weekend in a break with my usual tradition of doing 4 days on, 3 days off. I thought, well, why not? Let's have a Friday video, a Saturday video, and who knows, we could do a Sunday video as well. So I've watched the entire Tucker Carlson and Buckley Carlson interview, which is interesting and a little bit strange for a number of reasons. One of the reasons that it's strange, of course, is that Buckley Carlson is Tucker's brother, and he's got one of those, like, I mean, they talk, you know, he likes cigarettes, but he's got one of those real smoker's voices, you know. No, he's like a 30 a day man by the sound of his kind of croaky voice. So that's one thing. Another thing is you're kind of constantly reminded throughout this conversation that Tucker and his brother Buckley here are truly WASP elites. Okay, they're not just white Americans. They are of that elite class, and they are WASPs. And they are country club WASPs, okay? That comes through quite a lot. And it's almost like Tucker's way of letting his audience know, you know, I'm not actually one of you. I come from a really quite privileged background. And when I'm speaking from this old elite. And, you know, I've got this long-standing theory that Tucker secretly is working for like the deeper American state or for the CIA or something like this. But I do wonder what the purpose of this particular interview was, because it's quite a, they just kind of chat for 2 hours. You know, they kind of go through Buckley's history as a Trump supporter and so on. Buckley, I would say, has got some of that rebellious boomer spirit about him, right? He's obviously, you know, whether he, not a political libertarian, but the libertarian spirit or the spirit of freedom, you know, the rebel, that comes through quite a lot, that sometimes he's just a rebel without a cause, that he wants to push back a little bit against, you know, the stuffy establishment or something like this. But for me, the most interesting thing in the entire interview is the bit that I'm going to focus on, which is that Tucker, I mean, there's a couple of things. I'm going to play a bit from the very middle of the interview, about 40 or 50 minutes in, where basically Tucker accuses Donald Trump of having an ethnic resentment against WASPs, right? An ethnic resentment against WASPs, right? Now, this was a little bit confusing to me because WASP stands for white, Anglo-Saxon Protestant. And I thought, well, hold on a second. Isn't Trump white? Isn't he Anglo-Saxon? You know, his mother's Scottish, isn't she? And his dad was German. So he's like, you know, and then isn't he a Protestant? So I thought, well, surely Trump himself is a WASP. And it kind of got me interested in what on earth is Tucker talking about here. And then later on, they have this really quite odd conversation. I'm not going to play from that bit, but they have an odd conversation where they say, you know, there's some weird things about Trump. Like, he never touches, like, he's the only president who won't even touch a Bible. You know, didn't lay his hands on the Bible when he was sworn in. And that, you know, he's, you know, said quite a few blasphemous things in the past. And the only thing that he seems to see as sacred, basically, are his, you know, Chabad donors. And then they skirted around this, and I was trying to really understand what they were talking about. But Tucker was, and Buckley, I think they were intimating that Trump wasn't Christian, that Trump had secretly converted to some other religion, or that, you know, the center of his spiritual affections was not Christianity. And I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk about that before. And I was trying to work out, like, are they trying to make out that Trump is like somehow like a, you know, converted to Judaism, that he's like crypto, you know, because people can convert to Judaism. I think Javier Milei in Argentina converted. So that was weird. That was a very strange part of the conversation. And it was so strange that I asked Grok, and I was like, Grok, what's going on in this bit of this conversation? And Grok, I was like, are they suggesting that Trump is converted to Judaism? And Grok was like, no, that's a complete misreading. And I was like, okay, but look, consider the context. They've just spent the past half hour talking about what, you know, what his loyalties are and who he cares about and how he won't touch the Bible. So what are they actually getting at, Grok? You know, and he was like, oh, no, that would be a misreading. They don't actually say that, said Grok. Grok said, in fact, really what they're trying to get towards is that he has converted to a kind of Chabad Israel first civic religion. I was like, oh, okay. That's a strange, that's a weird one, Grok. That's basically one of the odd things they got into. Now, we're going to start watching the clip. But before we get going, I recommend you all buy courses at the Academic Agency. And it's a very special time to buy courses, friends, because it's the spring. I couldn't help but notice that Steam has got a sale on. Steam having a sale on is usually my trigger to have my own sale. We haven't had a sale for 5 months. Last sale was ShoreJan all the way back in January. It's now May. Sun is coming out. That means you need to keep cool. And our promo code is COOL. Everybody wants to be cool. Like this guy. This guy is cool. Do you know who else is cool? People who do courses at the Academic Agency. And you too can be cool by getting a course today with promo code COOL, which gets you 25% off all courses today. Promo code COOL. Yeah, promo code COOL. So buy it now. That's 25% off any course you want. And what I would do, you know, ever the gamer, ever min-maxing, I pick up the mega bundle and I apply the code to it. And that gives you loads of courses with a huge chunk of money off. If you compare that price to paying individually for them, it's pretty much half price. So, that's the way to game, to min-max the courses. Okay, with all of that said, let's watch a little bit of Tucker and his brother here, Buckley, talking about resentment against the WASPs and also Donald Trump's personal resentment. And in the time-honored tradition, I will smoke this cigar in the background and I will pause it when I feel like I want to intervene.
Perfectly appropriate. I may have voted for him if he'd done something like that. If he'd been capable of doing something like that. Otherwise, he... Actually, I don't ever revel in other people's misfortune, but one of the great things about Trump was his dynasty bashing, destroying, the fact that he had destroyed the Bush hold on the political world on the right was one of his greatest accomplishments, even more so, I think, than destroying the Clintons, because he's never really followed through with that, and either he's never prosecuted these people who are so outside the law, but he did peel back the mask of these globalist pussies who've had such an effect on our.
There was a slight disconnect between Tucker and his brother sometimes as well, I thought, where Buckley is a little bit more gung-ho, a little bit more of a, dare I say, classic rightoid than Tucker is at this point. So, you know, some of this sort of stuff, although watching it did remind me quite how much of a rightoid Tucker is as well, still. But it's interesting. I also wonder, I had a hope that a lot of the audience would follow Tucker in what he wants to do, which is some sort of left-right coalition, you know, identifying common enemies. Realistically, I'm not sure whether that's going to be a goer. Certainly, people didn't seem up for it here. And certainly from the chatter I've seen online, it just seems like the right are just going to stubbornly against that idea. You know, in my opinion, value free, it's a winning move. But nobody else seems to agree. So, you know, sorry, Tucker, you know, we can't help the raw materials we've got. It is where it is.
In our lives for so long.
Well, he really meant it with the Bushes. Yeah, he hated them because they were wasps. He hates wasps, but he's also obsessed with them. I've talked to him about it many times, and he's obsessed with them. And he feels, the whole Mar-a-Lago was built
when he was denied entry.
See, Donald Trump hates wasps. He's obsessed with them, but he hates them. That suggests Donald Trump is not a wasp himself. And anyway, I was trying to figure out what Tucker's getting at here. And I think that Tucker and his brother here, or Tucker specifically, is using WASP as a class thing as well as an ethnic. It's ethnic, but it's also class-based. And what he's referring to is the existing ruling class of America, the old ruling class, that over the past 50 years has been, you could say, circulated out in favor of what is often called the Ellis Island Coalition. In other words, Irish, Italian, Catholics, and Jews. You can have a look at it at the upper echelons of the Supreme Court, you know, where there's either a lot of Catholics or there's a lot of Jews, or you can just have a look at who's holding the great offices of state and things like this. And, you know, in classic elite theory, we'd say, well, there's been a miniature circulation of elites, the old wasps out, the new Ellis Island coalition in. I did discuss this once before on the channel, long time ago. I had Bronze Age Pervert on, and we discussed The Ordeal of Civility by John Cudahy. What he was saying in that book is that a lot of the Ellis Island types, when they turned up, whether they were Jewish, coming from Russia or coming from Eastern Europe, some of them from Germany, or whether they were Irish Catholics or Italian Catholics, felt that the existing WASP culture was not only very uptight and prim and proper, but very exclusionary as well, very exclusionary. You know, the exclusive gentlemen's clubs, the golf courses, and so on and so forth. And so they really resented the fact that they weren't allowed into these exclusive elite circles, and two, they didn't like they wanted a more kind of a less formal, less kind of rigid environment, more kind of happy-go-lucky, I guess, or you know, less upright. Because I mean, you could say, if you want to stereotype, you could say, well, Italians are warm people. They want a big hug. Hey, come over here, and all that sort of stuff. You know, Jewish people are quite expressive. You know, they're people who spend, you know, their big gestures. Again, the Irish, if you've met them, you know, they love to have a laugh and a drink and so on. And the WASP set, the New England WASP set, are not like that. And I have to say, being, you know, half Welsh, half Iranian, and growing up in Wales, the Welsh, I think, are quite warm people as well. I have, in my travels to America, I will admit myself, I have really struggled to get on with New England WASP types in academic circles. Now, of course, they were woke, right? They were really woke, these ones. So you can imagine why I'd get struggle. But it wasn't just the wokery. You know, I can get on with someone who's woke if they are down to earth or a decent person. I've told the story before. I went to a Shakespeare conference in New Orleans, right? New Orleans. And this was, you know, going back a good while now, 2017, 2018. And I spent almost all my time there with this big black lesbian from Kansas, right? She was woke. She was a lesbian. She was a you know, black lesbian liberal English professor, if you can imagine. Yet she was chilled out. She was down to earth. She could have a laugh. I could make a joke and she wouldn't get offended. Whereas the New England types, they were so uptight that they couldn't get me and I couldn't get them. I'm one for no airs and graces. I just tell it to you straight. Whereas these people, there's definitely something there. So I will admit that even on a personal level, I struggled to get on with them myself, the ones that I've met. They were too aware of status and hierarchy in a way that was alien, to the English collegiate academic style, right? In an English university setting, yes, you can have a don. Yes, there's a kind of an official hierarchy and so on. But the collegiate spirit is that everybody just kind of talks to everyone. It's not like, oh, you guys are up there and we're down here. Whereas in America, those New England guys were so status conscious and so on and so forth. That always rubbed me up the wrong way as well. Because I was like, look, hold on a second. I don't care about that. What about the special one here? You know, like a kind of, literary Jose Mourinho or something. Let's just talk. Let's just talk here as intellectuals. The English way, the British university system is very much like that, where people don't go in for these kind of like invisible walls. Whereas in the American setups I've been to, it's almost like these conferences are segregated between those kind of New England WASP types and, dare I say, just normal people, like this black lesbian. I mean, yeah, she was a black lesbian, but she was normal, and I could get on with her as a bloke from Wales. This is the sort of thing I'm talking about. So I understand the ordeal of civility, because that particular set from New England are weird. So when Tucker's saying Trump hates them, he suggests it's an ethnic resentment, which confuses me still. But he could be talking about this thing. And you can imagine a guy like Trump from the Queens, brash New Yorker, you know, a guy who's into bling, who doesn't have particularly, sophisticated taste. He's a little bit vulgar, you know. You can imagine him rubbing up wrong, you know, badly up against some of these uptight types. So anyway, let's see where this goes. I got a little bit carried away there, but there is something, and if I'm not trying to have a go at like New England WASPs or anything like that, but I do I can see where this Ellis Island crew were coming from, or where Donald Trump was coming from. Value free analysis. I can see, because it rubbed me up the wrong way when I come into contact with them. Not just in that, but one in New Orleans, but every single conference I went to over there. There was one in Chicago, there was one up in New York, a couple up in New York. And I've met people from around the world. Back in my old job, I financial industry in London and in Chicago and New York. That set were cool. The financial guys were, you didn't really come across these New England types there. But in that world, in that academic atmosphere, my gosh, I mean, I couldn't get on with them at all. Not my people. Anyway, let's carry on.
Free into the B&T. Yes.
Which has like totally been lost to history. They're directly across the street from each other. And he built his club. Happened to be there. I was in Palm Beach. It was 85 or 86, something like that. We were staying with our friends there. Yes. You were there. And we're, having lunch at the Bath Tennis Club. And everyone's like, oh, this Donald Trump is building a club across the street for basically to give us the finger. And no, we're not letting him or any of his friends in our club. And I don't think they have to this day, 40 years later. So
you can see, I mean, Trump is built Mar-a-Lago as an FU against this New England set, basically. As part of the ordeal of civility, you might say. And I mean, Heath calling it ethnic resentment. I mean, I would just read it as straight up class resentment in a way, or possibly even something else. I mean, I don't, you know, I was saying I couldn't get on with these New England types. I wouldn't call it a class resentment. I didn't resent them because of their class. I've known plenty of posh people, upper middle class, upper class people from this country. Never had a problem. I can get on with absolutely anybody. The people I always rankle against, or is the people who are super duper obsessed with I get like social anxiety, social status, what you're meant to do at any little time, you know, and whether they're British or American or any other race. I struggle to get on with people like that because they're not. There's an inauthenticity and a fakeness that I find exhausting about it, you know. And it's not just. I mean, there are Iranians who are like that as well in their own way. People who are just driven by the wrong things. And I'm not saying that that's what. I'm not trying to like excuse Donald Trump here. I can just relate in a way to why people may have an issue with this kind of uptightness. I can imagine what that club across the road from Mar-a-Lago was like and why a man like Trump would rankle at them and want to be like F you type thing. Not the ideal energy to try to be like driven by revenge, as I talked about in a video recently. But I'm trying to like empathize in a way with why this style of WASP bred resentment of this sort. Because they are hard to get, they're really hard to get on with, in my experience.
That none of that was ever reported by anybody.
I'm aware.
Yeah,
no, they focused on the flag, which was pretty cool.
There were a lot of dynamics here
going on
that nobody ever wants to talk about. But we just happened to have witnessed them firsthand, so I know exactly what this was. But Trump's resentment toward the WASPs was the driving force there, really. And he was an Outer Boroughs guy, never felt accepted by them, always wanted to be, always bragging, I went to Penn, like, okay, Penn. You know, and like, they never liked him, they never accepted him, and boy, did he get them back.
Yes, he did.
And even to this day, I mean,
Trump is the exact, I mean, you know, knowing the tastes and the styles of this sort of people, he is their exact opposite. He's brash, he's a show-off, he's arrogant. He's, you know, all about bling and so on. So you can see how Trump would be so vulgar to their taste as well, and why they wouldn't want their club smirched, you know, with Donald Trump. You can understand it from their point of view as well. This is a chalk and cheese situation. These two types of people were never going to get on. And one of the things that I find slightly interesting here is that, you know, ethnically speaking, Donald Trump, you know, is half German, half Scottish. Yet his, you know, the spirit that he embodies is closer to the kind of Queens, Bronx. You know, it's almost like who lives in Queens and the Bronx? It's like, you know, I mean, it was like a Jewish area, black area, Italians live there. You know, this is like New York, you know, the ethnicities of people who live in New York. And he is closer to that spirit. You know, his mentor famously was Roy Cohn, who taught him a lot of when he was in his 20s. He taught him a lot of what, you know, how he carries himself and his basic attitude and never admitting a defeat and so on. I find it interesting. You know, I guess Evola would say that he's spiritually embodying, you know, a different ethnic group, because unless there's some nuance between because the WASP, in the way that Tucker means it, is I guess what they call a heritage American, that is the founding stock Americans, and obviously the founding stock Americans were not German. And I mean, the Scots ended up wearing they ended up as the Appalachians, right? And they aren't exactly of the WASP type either. They're not New England types. So you could say the German Scottish thing does actually preclude Trump from being a WASP in this narrow sense of, well, it's American founding stock, elite American founding stock. That's what Tucker's getting at, I think.
6 weeks ago, I was talking about this. His resentment toward the Bushes and its ethnic and social.
He acknowledges that literally up front?
No, of course not. But it's like, but he's very fixated on the WASP thing and does talk about it a lot.
I believe it.
Yeah. With me anyway. It's always like, what are you saying? But whatever. I don't care. Ignore it. But
there's another group in America that's kind of fixated on the WASPs too.
Yeah. I've noticed that too.
Equal fervor and hostility.
Yeah. I don't know. But you know, you get what you put up with and they put up with it and like, oh, it's okay. You have a good point. Anyway, he wanted to destroy the Bushes because, you know, he didn't agree with their program, I guess.
The only thing I would say is that, I mean, you know, if there's anything like the ones I met, I wouldn't want to be part of their clubs. I wouldn't want to hang out with them at all. want to know them. Just on the basis that they're just so difficult to get on with. So, you know, then again, if Tucker is one of them, I reckon I get on with Tucker. But Tucker's not like these ones I was thinking of, because they were typically very woke and very, there was like this kind of spirit of a type of Protestantism in them all that you could see. I remember they did this thing where one of them got on stage and apologized to scholars of color, you know, it was during like peak woke, and it struck me as almost like the church confessional. Now, when somebody confesses their sins on the podium, Tucker doesn't strike me as being quite as bad as these ones that I met. I reckon I get on with Tucker, so can't generalize about any group really.
He said he didn't agree with the program, but the real reason he wanted to destroy them was, you know, they go to the BNT and he doesn't.
You don't think it was his anti-war position?
Well, I thought it was.
I did too.
Okay, so let me say, this is like one of the reasons I'm just so grateful to talk to you is because you were there and you saw a lot of this stuff, and these details just get.
And then, see, this is another thing. Like, what was Buckley Carlson doing there? Like, why was he hanging out in this elite club in 1986? You know, most normal people weren't. So this is also Tucker kind of explaining that there is like this secret elite world that most normal people are not a part of, but he is. Him and his brother are part of a set where they get to just do things. Like Buckley mentions at some point that he's been freelancing for 10 years, you know, bouncing around writing speeches for people. Well, I mean, I can't do that. Most normal people can't do that just as a job because they're not part of that set. So Tucker is revealing some aspect of the American system to us here.
Lost. And, you know, some details are not worth preserving because, like, who cares? But some of them really are at the center of the question. Like, this is why things happened.
Yes.
And everyone lies about everything all the time. And you just want, like, somebody somewhere in the distant future to know what actually happened.
Yes. Preserve the truth.
Preserve the truth. That's preserve the truth. So I just want this to be a record of the truth. And that, you know, status anxiety, which is a huge driver of human behavior, is it not?
Yes.
It's a huge driver of...
What I was talking about, status anxiety. The trouble is that, I mean, again, this is just my... You know, I could be colored too much by my own personal experiences here. To me, the status anxiety is all coming from them. It's all coming from the WASP set, the New England types. And they really resent it when somebody just doesn't give a shit, like me or that black lesbian woman or Donald Trump. They really actually, like, it rankles them. Who's this guy? Why is he not kowtowing to our airs and graces? He just doesn't give a shit. What's wrong with him? He's offensive, or she's, you know, we don't want to hang out with her, or we don't want to hang out with him. I don't know if it's driven by like Donald Trump's social anxiety. I think Donald Trump was probably rubbed up the wrong way. You know, I don't like Trump anymore. as people know, for various different reasons. But to some extent, I can understand, you know, why he felt motivated to try to get his own back on these sorts of people that I'm talking about. And maybe this explains a lot of what's happened in America over the past 50 or 60 years. You know, anyway, let's carry on.
President Trump's behavior, huge driver of his behavior, you know, plays a role in all this stuff. These unannounced conflicts between groups for power and prestige and rank. These are big questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
What drives human behavior drives policy in the end.
Exactly. Yeah. And so if you have the total displacement after over 200 years of the American ruling class by a new group, that's a big thing.
Yes.
But nobody says a word about it. And I'm not even taking sides in it. Though, you know, obviously I have a side
I'm
not taking sides in it. But like, that happened. Yeah. It happened over 40 years. And now it's complete, and like no one can say that happened.
He's talking about the circulation of the elites that I referenced just now. What he's trying to get at is that the WASPs were replaced by the Ellis Island Coalition and people like Donald Trump. Let's just put it in different terms. Donald Trump is new money. These guys are old money. It's basically what it is. It's old money versus new money. And it's the American form of what we would call in this country snobbery. It's snobbery. Now, I know a lot of people like to defend the old aristocracy and the upper classes and so on. I have a slightly different view. You know, I'm from a working class background. And, you know, I mean, obviously my dad is from Iran. And I don't really like a lot of that stuff. I find it exhausting. I find it really exhausting. All the little protocols and all the little, you know, being seen with the right people and wearing the right thing. And that's not me at all. I'm all about being your authentic self. And it's one of the things that I'm grateful for in life, that I've been able to have mentors or have teachers who also had this attitude of just being like, yeah, we don't do that. You know, my PhD supervisor was very down to earth, earthy, northern bloke. And I appreciated that. And I'm, you know, I've gravitated towards people who I can get on with. Who are more down to earth, who are earthy, who don't have airs and graces, who don't have pretensions. Because I find it, I really do find it all a bit much. You know, even when I turned up in Oxford, you know, and there were people who really go for it. They really, you know, the white kid gloves and the, you know, the, what do they call it? I can't even remember what it's called. What's that? Tuxedo you have to wear all the time, the subfusc and all the rest of it. Yeah, okay, I had my, you know, I dressed up a few times, but there are people who are into it. They're into the form. They're into all of that. A lot of gay people are into this sort of stuff as well. And for me, it was just like, is this really what it's about? You know, I want to learn. I'm here because of ideas. I'm here because of books. I'm here because I want to understand how the world works. Just different people are motivated by different things. So, yeah, personality thing, I guess.
Are you kidding?
It's absurd.
Yeah, but good or bad, like, by the way, that is the story of history. Like, groups displace other groups, and there's reasons for that, and survival of the fittest and all that. Got it. I'm not even decrying it. I'm just saying the fact that no one will acknowledge that happened and that it had massive effects on everything, and that those resentments or aspirations drive behavior that has results that we see all around us, like annoying.
I will say as well, when we're on this topic, because what we're really talking about is classism or class resentment coming, in this case, coming from Trump towards the old WASPs, or the new money versus the old money. In my experience in this country, so much of it comes from the middle class or the upper middle class rather than from like the true, like you can once in a while meet, people who are from aristocracy and so on. In my experience, those people tend to be a bit more carefree, mad as hatters. And I can get on with those people because they can have a laugh. The people I have always struggled with is the people who are uptight or the people who are just so conscious of what you are, where you are, who you're with, what you're saying. I can't do it. I just find it. It's not my, it causes me anxiety. Not anxiety because I want to kind of keep up with the Joneses and so on. Just the pressure of the environment. Just like, come on, just be yourself. Chill out a little bit. And then what happens is that people do this for so much. They do this so much to themselves that that does end up becoming their authentic self. They've kind of conditioned themselves into being that. And I don't know. I can't be like that myself. Anyway, let's carry on.
One will say it.
It's really shocking. It is.
I remember I was saying there was a girl called Catherine Rempel. I think she worked at the Washington Post, but she was like a Fox contributor or something. Not impressive at all.
I looked her up, by the way. Yes, she is of the ethnic, she's from the Ellis Island Coalition. I think her parents are of Jewish descent. So that's the necessary context to what Tucker's about to say here.
But I was sitting on the set with her in a commercial break once. She was like a sort of liberal neocon type person, but not smart. Anyway, we're talking and I'm trying to be nice. And she's like a younger person. And I'm like, where are you from? And I grew up in Palm Beach. You grew up in Palm Beach? That's sort of interesting. I know Palm Beach. Don't go there anymore, but I know it, well. And she goes, yeah, I grew up there and something about this or that. And she's like, yeah. And we moved there and my dad sued the Bath and Tennis Club for discrimination because they wouldn't let him in. And I'm listening to this. I'm like, he sued a country, your dad? If I'm getting this wrong, I just want to apologize, but I'm pretty sure I remember this conversation.
See, I can't understand this mindset either. My attitude would always be like, look, if this club doesn't want me, sod ya. So, I mean, I'd be more likely to do what Trump did. If you don't want me, I'll set up my own club, right? I'm not going to try to get in where I'm not wanted. So I don't really understand the mindset of suing the club. I'm kind of with Tucker here.
Like it was yesterday. This is 10 years ago. Yeah, he sued because they wouldn't let us in. And I'm like, not my job to tell you that these are private associations. Like, I don't know. What are you even talking about? Like, that's repulsive to me. A club should have, you should have the right to hang out with whoever you want to hang out on whatever basis you want to make that decision. But she was like bragging about it. And I was like, the hatred behind that, it's like the desire to destroy something that you didn't build was like so evident. This girl's a hater, actually. That's what I realized talking to her.
Plus that she could be so unself-aware and right, understand that is the most repugnant thing. Of course, it dominates American culture now. It wasn't acceptable when we were growing up.
Oh, I know. No, I'm aware.
No.
I tell you what, they're getting at something that is discussed by many writers in the past, is this attitude towards, I guess, what you'd kind of legalistic mindset, where you want to sue all the time. This is probably a change that has been for the worse in American culture. It's also come over here. And part of that, I think, is that a lot of British society and a lot of WASP society is built on codes that are kind of tacit and unspoken, codes that are unspoken, or remnants of what you might call honor, upholding things, honor, custom, tradition, these things unofficially holding things up, and you don't need to write it down necessarily. Whereas the culture of making it legal, taking it to court and suing, okay, it's somewhat alien. And yet, here's this story from Tucker. That has become endemic, especially since woke has become a thing. It happens all the time. You know, my you know, I said, I know somebody who's part of this bowling club and it wouldn't take women. And then they had to get, you know, this has happened to basically every group that tries to maintain any sort of exclusivity whatsoever. It ends up being legal and somebody ends up suing them, you know, because they wouldn't take women or they wouldn't take somebody from this ethnic group or that ethnic group. And of course, that's the point of codifying these things in law. And it's the death of freedom of association, which is one of the true ways of understanding the Civil Rights Act. And again, my attitude to this is like, well, look, I don't get on, you know, I couldn't get on with those people. So if they set up a club and wanted to exclude somebody like me from it, I wouldn't want to be part of that. Why do you want to be part of that club is the question. And of course, the real reason is because in this case, these clubs had power attached to them. And, you know, it was a struggle for power. It was a struggle to open up those elite networks of power, the old boys club, the old money club, to new money, to new ethnic groups, to new types of people. And they had to do it through using legal force. It's basically what happened here, for good or for ill. And that is what happened in not just in this, in America, but in this country as well. I'm sure if you look back, there were legal cases where some Indian dude tried to get into a gentleman's club and wasn't allowed and kicked up a fuss and then he was allowed in, or women were allowed, or you know, all of these exclusive clubs have had episodes like this in recent or not so recent history.
Anyway, okay, so I just want to establish for people who aren't aware of all these dynamics just that they do exist and that they're absolutely consequential and we're seeing their effects, but no one will tell us that. So in your specific case, 2020.
All right, so I want to stop it there. There's a little bit later on where he starts talking about Ben Shapiro. And I wanted to play this because I'm frequently interested to see the sorts of areas that Tucker is willing to get into and what he's skirting around in this entire interview with Buckley, which is that at some level, Tucker is angry about the fact that the old WASP elite have been displaced. Okay. He points it out, but you can tell in this clip that he really doesn't like the new kind of ruling class in America, and he would have maybe preferred it if these things hadn't happened. Let's just listen to this a little bit on Ben Shapiro. I found it interesting myself.
She was a survivor, first yes. and foremost. She was a cockroach, like, that way.
Yeah,
you couldn't kill Hillary. I mean, we've been around since Hillary showed up on the scene.
No, been there the whole time. I ran into her in Riyadh.
Yes, I know.
2 months ago. You think you were there? Yeah, no, she's still here.
With her beard humor.
I almost ran into her. I walked in and, wow, Hillary Clinton. It's like right in front of me. She's like 4 feet tall at this point.
Confirmation that she's still with her girlfriend who's yeah. married to George Soros' son.
I know.
I
know.
Mean, it's... what a shame.
Now, this is something that Buckley Carlson keeps on doing throughout this, which is basically claiming that various famous politicians are gay. he claims that Hillary's a lesbian, that Obama is gay, that, I mean, they keep on calling people, Lindsey Graham, obviously, and lots of others, allegedly, I should say, but I don't want any of them suing me.
That is. Most people don't talk about that. They should.
I know.
I'm sorry. She's in public life. She doesn't have a private life. Yeah. It's worthy of examination.
Yeah,
sorry.
I'm gonna stick to my no outing policy. The only person I've broken it for is Barack Obama. I just couldn't. I'm sorry. Because you know why I did that? Because I really don't think that you should do that. I feel guilty every time I call Lindsey.
I can't remember whether it's here or elsewhere. One of the things they get into is something I've complained about on the channel many times before. And one of the reasons why I don't really go to much. I don't go to events very much. I don't get involved in many social clubs and things like that because they're all gay. Like, there's so many, especially in Tory spaces or conservative spaces, there's just so many gay men. and this is just a fact of the matter. They discussed this at some point, and that's the thing I took from this, is just how candid and open they were. It's almost like they were having this conversation, forgetting it was being recorded. It was just like, you know, let's just sitting with the Carlsons for 2 hours. Yeah, it was kind of curiously unguarded in that way. Let's carry on.
Graham Gaig, I shouldn't be doing that. That is not the Christian way at all. The only reason I did it for Obama was because there was a guy, an accuser, and they arrested him and like tormented him. And he like died in poverty and obscurity pretty recently. He was a very screwed up dude. He was kind of sad, prison gay kind of guy.
But he was credible.
He was absolutely telling the truth. There's no question about it in my mind. I mean, you know, it's he said, but I don't even know if Obama's denied it. But Obama was on the down low for sure.
Big time.
And everyone's like, oh, how dare you say that? Well, his biographer said that. Obama himself, in a letter to a distant cousin of ours, I'm embarrassed to say, we have a relative who dated Obama.
I like Tucker. I know a lot of people don't like him these days. I don't know why. But I will point out one in the interest of value-free analysis. He does do one thing that slightly irritates me, and maybe this is like the wasp in him or something. He says, oh, it's not the Christian way to do this, but now I'm going to do it for like 10 minutes. Like, I shouldn't be doing this. It's actually really bad to do this, but I'm going to have my cake and eat it. It's that kind of like slight, you know, I always say like the defining trait of this type of Protestant is hypocrisy, right? Now, I'm not having a go at Protestants in particular, but this is a trope that other people say that, oh, the hypocrisy is, you know, I mean, I was saying about that New England set whose entire ethos is anti-racism, right? And I swear this is not a meme. I have never met a bunch of more racist people. Why? Because all of the people who weren't WASPs were segregated off because they wouldn't bother with them, even though their whole thing is virtue signaling about woke. All of the Southern professors, all of the black ones, all the Indian ones, they weren't invited to the meal. So there is this weird thing that, you know, when they say the Democrats are the real racists, they really are. They genuinely are. Anyway, let's carry on.
But which is like shocking. But anyway, I don't marinate on that. I know you don't either.
I'm so unaware of it as well, so blissfully unaware of their own hypocrisy. Well, maybe they are aware of it, which would make it even worse. But what I'm saying is Tucker does a line in this as well. Where he was like, oh, Jesus would say we shouldn't do this, but now I'm going to spend 20 minutes doing it. You know, as a good Christian, I shouldn't do this, but also, like, you know, let's talk for 10 minutes about how Obama's gay. You know what I mean?
But anyway, in a letter to a relative of ours said, you know, I've considered being gay, but it's not challenging enough. It's like, did you ever write letters like that in college?
I don't.
Should I admit this to you? No, I don't think I will.
I think I wrote letters to any man, actually. No.
Did you write letters to your girlfriend being like, you know, I was thinking about being gay. Just thinking about, you know, this morning I was thinking, maybe I should be gay. Then I thought, that's not enough of a challenge.
All right, I will. In the spirit of radical honesty, I will. When I was a teenager, I loved David Bowie. I loved Morrissey from the Smiths. And a lot of my heroes were gay at that time. Or were perceived, you know, David Bowie actually married Iman Bowie and basically ended up being straight. But because of that, because I was into Bowie and so on, I had this idea when I was around that age that I wanted to be gay. And that actually that life would be easier. Life would be easier if you were gay, because I had this idea that, you know, men are just always up for sex. So it'd be like, you know, in my imagination, being gay would be like, you know, we'll go out, we'll get a meal, then we'll have sex, then we'll play Xbox together. Sound good? And you, of course, because it was two blokes, you could just be businesslike in that way, in a way that you can't be with ladies. Okay. Any advice for younger men? Do not say, let's have a meal, then have sex, then play Xbox to a girl. She has to be, you have to kind of make the mood right and all the rest of it. Whereas in my imagination, gay guys didn't have to bother with all that bollocks. So I always have this kind of slightly meme idea, you know, that it would have been cool to be gay. So, yeah, I had a moment there when I was a teenager where I thought, oh, maybe it'd be good to be gay. It turns out you just cannot, if you're straight, as I am, you can't be gay. You just can't be. I'll just leave it there. You're either straight or you're gay. You cannot, I don't like men, I'm afraid. So that's one thing. I talked about manifestations and, you know, repeating words and so on. I don't think you can make yourself gay if you're straight. I really don't. All right, let's carry on.
I would say about Lindsey Graham, it is fair game because that man holds somehow a lot of power over America's future and America's boys who fight in our wars.
Right.
And he is...
Wanted to get to the bit with Ben Shapiro. Are they going to talk about it? I timestamped it here. Maybe my timestamp is off.
No, I know. It's just, I think we have to, in our business or just in life, fight against the tendency to judge everyone but ourselves.
For sure.
And I think if you're going to tell the truth about other people, you should be required. You should require yourself.
Yeah, look, and I just told you something that you can, people will then use to make fun of me, I know. But I'm practicing radical honesty. I'm saying when I was 18, I had a little moment there where I entertained batting for the other side in an intellectual capacity. Unfortunately, that's not how I made it, basically, right? There is just no way I could have batted for the other side. But I did entertain it. Almost nobody is honest enough with themselves to admit stuff like that. But maybe if more people did, life would be better. Maybe Tucker's right. If more people were just radically honest like that, everybody would get on better. I know a guy around here who's a gay guy who practices radical honesty, and I have great chats with him because he has no filter. He has absolutely no filter, and he'll just come out and say stuff. Sometimes he just says it to see what I'll do. Because he knows what I'm like, he knows he's not going to get a shock response from me, or there's nothing he can say or that is going to, like, you know, I'm never going to give him the kind of Mary Whitehouse response. So, and because of that, because I'm honest and he's honest, we can get on great. That's why I got on with that black lesbian in New Orleans, because she was honest and I was honest. And I kind of love that. Those are the people I can get on best with, is the ones who just have very little filter and the ones who, like, almost can't take offense. You can't offend me and I can't offend you. And once you're on that footing, you can have not only good laughs, but you can actually have, like, deep conversations as well. So there's something to this, what Tucker's talking about.
To tell the truth about yourself first. So, because it's just so easy to be like, oh, they're bad, they're secretly, you know, sodomites. Okay, well, we're all secretly something. So, like, it's just important to say that.
Tell you, Tucker, I'm not secretly a sodomite, okay? I just told you I entertained it, and I just can't, I don't work that way. Unfortunately, we all have our blessings and our curses. My curse in life is that I like women. Oh, man. If only it could have been different, because if you've had to, positive vibes, everyone. Women have a great place in the world. Read Evelyn's Eros and the Mysteries of Love if you want a truly enlightened idea of the masculine and the feminine and how those two things can work in harmony and how you can kind of, all those bits that annoy you about women, of which in my case, it's almost all of them. You can kind of come to a place where you actually love them for the very things that used to annoy you. Does that make sense? Because, you know, you can't have two yins and you can't have two, like, there's a reason why the masculine and the feminine energy come together. They can kind of complete each other. So anyway, I recommend reading Eros and the Mysteries of Love by Evola, all messing around aside.
Anyway, sorry.
Did you say we're all secretly something, not all secretly sodomites?
No,
sorry, just to clarify.
Sodomites. No, we're not. I mean, speak for myself.
There is a lot of that in the Republican Party.
It's I don't understand it. It's insane.
Can't be accidental. Someone we had dinner with last night who's very wise said, demonic influences concentrate on those with power. And that is so clearly true.
I believe
true.
That was my wife of 35
yes,
years who said that. No, she's a wise chick. No, that is totally right. Demonic influence concentrates on those who have power. Beware of power.
Yes.
That's why it's...
And those who seek power.
Yes. No, that is true. It's a chicken and the egg thing. Do screwed up people go in to politics and business? Or does the...
No, I will say, is Tucker suggesting that all gay people are screwed up? Is that what he's saying here? I think that's the intimation, but... I wouldn't want to go that far. Although I have noticed, as I mentioned, that where there is a concentration of power, there does seem to be a higher incidence of gay men, especially. But there could be reasons for that. You know, basic elite theory. You know, the closed spaces, the gay club as an elite space where not only are men meeting up, but they're conspiring. You know, this is why all the Tory circles turn into gay clubs ultimately. Could be a correlation there. But I wouldn't want to go so far as to say that all gay people are demonic. You know, I've known lots of gay people in my life, and there's no reason to say that they're demons, you know. And some of them, bizarrely, that I've known, like Milo, for example, ends up switching. So that happens too, somehow.
The reality of living near power, having power, does that destroy them?
I think clearly both. I mean, they've done studies that show an inordinate amount of sociopaths gravitate towards elective office and also corporate power.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This past year, actually, they something like 60% or something were
really
demonstrably sociopathic. Yeah, I mean, if you wake up every morning and say, I am the wisest, I am the toughest, I'm the leader of all men, and I can make decisions for other people, there's something wrong with you.
I've never thought that.
I would love to see a study done on gay men to see how many of them, because, you know, there's the stereotype of the effeminate gay man, but I'd love to see a study to see how many gay men, especially in these elite sort of circles, actually end up over-indexing in testosterone. And in a strange way, are uber male, like too male, if that makes any sense. They're so male that they just reject women altogether. That's always been a kind of slight interest of mine, just sort of like academic curiosity, I guess. I wonder if anybody knows that I know of, it'd probably be Aidan Paladin. Aidan Paladin is sciencey and autistic enough to pull up those stats. So it'd be great if I had it here. I'd be like, Aidan, pull up the stats. But yeah, if you're watching, Aidan, let me know if there's any stats on that. I would be surprised if a certain portion of gay men didn't like massively over-index in masculine, uber-masculine traits. And then like there's an opposite extreme that over-indexed in feminine traits or feminine or low testosterone or something like this. These days, a lot of them might transition or become women. Right, like trans. Anyway, let's carry on.
That one time in my life. I've never looked in the mirror and said, you're a leader of men.
I've suffered some delusions, but not that one.
No. You're a tiger. Urgh. Urgh. You're a tiger, Tucker. Let's get back to riding the tiger, shall we?
No.
Not that one, I'm like...
Yeah. Well, this is why I think this to myself all the time. We should require every man to have a mirror outside his shower.
Yes.
So as you emerge from the shower every day, you see this lumpy, furry primate staring back at you, and you're like...
Weird fur in places.
Can't take yourself too seriously.
Yes. Amen. God bless our women tolerating and loving us despite that.
There's this amazing exchange between Jesus...
Okay, I can't find the Ben Shapiro bit, but basically Tucker gets very upset at Ben Shapiro, thinking, remember that whole speech that Shapiro gave about, you know, if you can't afford a house in the town that you grew up, you should just leave. Tucker goes on a massive rant about that. I can't find it for some reason. I thought it was, I timestamped it, and it just wasn't in the bit where I timestamped. And he suggests that the reason for that is that it's driven by hatred, ethnic hatred, it was just interesting. Anyway, this was a bit of a Friday. It was like a bonus video for Friday. I can't promise this sort of thing every week, but I just wanted to, I thought, well, you know, in the spirit of giving, rather than just sit here and smoke the cigar in silence, I could have recorded something, and I did. And in fact, there's quite a lot of this cigar left, so I'm going to, just after this, record a video on Connor Tomlinson and David Starkey. I'll do part two, and that will be out tomorrow morning. Little Saturday treat. Why not? Oh, promo code COOL, 25% off all courses, and I'll see you all tomorrow.